Good to be with you guys. Good to see everybody's face. And yeah, it was a crazy month and a half. So let's see. I went cross country. That was my big thing. Great. Got back. And just really, after I got back, had to take care of a couple of details from my mom's, and then boom, caught pneumonia. And I've never had that before, so for me, that was a big deal. And then I went from a nice cross-country drive to fighting for my life. So then that was in and out of the hospital. Lots of nights of, we used to have a young man in the Christian school, his name was Harold, and he had bad asthma. And I remember seeing this miserable look on his face at time. And they would tell me how they rushed him to the hospital and all that. I think he's the person I thought of the most. Because you're like on one inhaler to another inhaler, steroids and breathing treatments and, you know, the whole nine yards. So, yeah, it was quite, I mean, I'm sure you can hear it in my voice. I'm still like, still, yeah. I mean, I thought this is strange. I found out that no, that it would be probably about three, four months. And if it's in cold weather, it can be even longer. So, but I'm strong, I think. I mean, said that to Pastor Jay. I faked him out. I'm like, oh yeah, I think I'm coming to church. And then I would like have like an attack and I couldn't breathe and I couldn't. I was like, okay, so that's not happening. So, yeah, I was in Baltimore during this time. My mom's there and she's a nurse. So it was easier. And we were about seven, her house is about 7 minutes from, treatment center, I would say. Cause it was better than that. Cause it would, they were able to do things faster. And the big goal was to keep me out from being, actually I thought of you, because you stayed in the hospital long term once, and I said, I don't want to do it, because I had stayed in the hospital with her when she had had it once, and the one thing I remembered that, is that you don't sleep. You know what I mean? They're just in there, out, in and out, in and out.
They just be bugging.
Yes. And I was like, I can't do it because I already have a problem like that. I can't imagine me and myself getting better. And plus, with her, we had some good nurses, and then we had some really bad nurses. It's a toss-up. So I was like, you know what? I don't think so. God bless, and I'm thankful. I mean, Catherine, God bless her. She was night and day. So we did a lot of rushing back and forth, and that was. And I preferred that. I still would do it that way again, just because. But the last one was the biggie, and that was like, if this doesn't work, then I've got to go on oxygen, because I wasn't able to, you know, get to be consistent. So, but it was, I would say it was the beginning of the change, because it was then a night of, on average, I slept about an hour a day, and I'm not even kidding. I was just, the nights were the worst, because you know you were fighting for breathing, and you didn't want to wake anybody up. But at the same time, I was like,
And the nighttime is always worse when you're sick or something. You'll be good or can function during the day. And then the minute you want to go lay down at night, that's when like, all hit you.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, the biggest, okay, that's interesting you bring that up. Because the biggest joy I had was, and that only happened, I mean, actually it's still not happening. Because tonight I could tell I'll sleep sitting up. But the first time I could sleep laying down, that was literally... I was like, okay, great. Because I couldn't do anything that I wasn't sitting up. I mean, it was like you were getting choking on your own, you know, cough or whatever. I couldn't spit and, you know, vomit. I would cough till I vomited, you know. So it was like, my big thing was like, so I sat up all the time. And, you know, you're fighting your cough, you're fighting everything. But I just never had it. And the first time we went, it was just this long flu. And I would go and x-ray say no, and then all of a sudden x-ray said yes. So, and then that was, so it turned into whatever it turned into. But it's good, you know, it's, a couple people are sick, like Nyasha's sick. I'm like, stay away. Because I have to wait a little bit, and then I have to get a pneumonia shot. But I'm not supposed to get it until I'm well. And so I came back and everybody was sick. And I was like, saw Pastor Jay on Sunday. I'm like, please don't come near me. I can't even, my immune system's like shot right now. Which is why one of our students, JR, got sick with the stomach flu. And I picked that up. I was supposed to be right back in on Tuesday. And then I picked the stomach flu up. And that's why I'm trying to stay very, you know, it's fine. It's God. It's good. You know, it was fine. It was God. And, you know, great to be back. And so much, this is how far along I've been. I was like, oh man, okay, I gotta get dressed. We gotta drive over to, you know, their house because the Bible study, and it, but I totally forgot the Bible study had moved because I'd never been here once. The last time we were, you know, we had it, it wasn't anything like that. But I will say this, I did think this, then I slipped into, I had a birthday, you know, mid-century. And so I wanted to, you know, tell you guys a little bit about it, kind of give you an idea of what, you know, my travels, because I did, because really, I don't think we've really been together since the beginning of summer, because I went cross country, came back once or twice, and I was gone. Mm-hmm. So it's been a unique time. Hey, how are you?
Good.
What's in that? Ah, Paul. That's what I'm calling him, by the way. Just wanted to serve you notice. I realized that this baby has like five names, and I decided to pick the name. Whatever. I decided to pick the name that I would remember.
Right.
So, you know, you can ask Janelle. Her baby was a different name for me for quite a long time. I'm really bad with names, so I decided Paul. When they told me one of the names was Paul, I said, that stuck. So I'm going to be the only, you know, great aunt calling. He's going to be like, I have one lady. He's calling me Paul. Yep, and Alyssa's going to go, yeah, that's Auntie Tasha. Auntie Miss Brown. Look at him. Well, I mean, it happens.
He's cold. Doctors won't do anything for him. They keep telling him to give him a bath with oatmeal.
Yeah, I mean, anything can be dangerous at this age. You don't want to mess with God's creation right now. So, he looks like a little man, doesn't he? Like a little man. I heard Kellen's bad.
He's bad?
That's when someone said, yeah, I said he's just looking to get into trouble.
I was like, that's what happens when you pass him around like a hot potato.
Oh my gosh! But they say, but fun. Everybody still wants to be around him, but he definitely believes he's large and in charge.
Uh-huh.
That's what my understanding is. He owns the church.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. So I was just giving everyone an update. So yeah, so then I came back, listened to her baby, and then I was out of here again. And so I thought one thing I was thinking during this time is like, well, at least I'll have a lot to say, because a lot of things have happened. During this time. So I think things will come out that I really believe God was speaking to me while I was down. Although it was life-threatening, I never had any thought that I would lose my life. It just was life-threatening. I mean, there's something when you're trying to catch your breath and don't feel like you're going to. And I don't care who you are. It's like breath is a very precious thing when you don't have it. So that fight was interesting. But I got well enough. That was a gift from God. Well enough just to finish for my birthday. I really wanted to go back to where I had grown up, and it was almost 40 years to the day. Almost 40 years within 6 months, rather, not to the day of when I accepted Christ. So I was able to go to Danville, Virginia, and by myself, and spend a bunch of time down there. And just really to be with God, think about it, things. And I got to go to all the little homes I grew up in, and all the most thing, probably the two biggest things that really spoke to me. One was going back to the church where I was saved and being able to thank them. I mean, if you can imagine, the church I got saved in is, you would think it's our church. It's older, sitting in the middle of the city. It's just a neighborhood church. Nothing special about it, but special just to a few people. And we would walk there when my mom, she was a single mom at the time, and she would work And so, but she, her rule is we had to go to church. So the three of us, I was 10, my brother 11, and the other one 14, and we would walk to church on Sundays. And then Saturdays we'd also go there for, like, to eat, because we didn't have a lot of money. I remember that's where I first tasted bologna. And because, you know, they'd make those little, like, little lunches. Like, I always see that one, the little lunch trays we had. It was a lunch tray right there. Mm-hmm. And then you have a bologna sandwich. And I went to Sunday school, and I really learned about God through these people. I did. So it was really a privilege to go back to them. And some had passed, but many of them were there, and they remembered me and remembered my family. And just to thank them and really just publicly thank them and for just their love. You know, and getting saved in that church. I was baptized in that church. I didn't even know it because, you know, you're kind of like not aware of everything. But my mom, because she married again in that church. My dad had died of asthma. So you can imagine that's something that I've carried from time to time. But she married in that church, remarried in that church. And that church was special. And so it was great. It was, and I just was able to tell them about their fruit and about how, you know, I felt like, wow, I was giving back. So you won't see me December 8th. That's a Sunday. They asked me to go back down there, and they have a 127th anniversary, and I'm going to go. And a lot of people come from different places. The original pastor was a Baptist church, so the original pastor, and in the Baptist denominations, very often you serve terms, not... it isn't often that a person serves their whole time in one church, especially in the Southern Baptist. I was reminded of what it is to be in the Bible Belt. You know, there's First Baptist, Lower Baptist, Upper Baptist, Second Baptist, Seventh Baptist. But I was grateful for this church, and one of their models was to lead the soul to Christ, and they did that well. But anyway, the pastor who led me to Christ, and again, Baptist churches are different. You don't, it's not this quiet thing. You know how Pastor Jay says, tell someone or whatever. And a Baptist church is a big deal. When they give the altar call, you go up there. So we went up there. And the entire and the whole church comes up and shakes your hand. You know. And I remembered that. So I remembered vividly. It was my true salvation. But and how I really got awakened to God. But I went to a lot of different places. But that pastor, anyway, he is now in Philadelphia, still preaching. And he's working with, like, HIV-positive people and his church, a small church, and he's going to be there. So I can't wait to see him and thank him, because I don't think, I was 10, I don't think you know what you do, you know, as a person, as a church. And the fact, I was so thankful that their church is pristine clean. Those people have made sure everything, the repair was up, everything. But not clean and like, oh, now they bought this and they bought this. Just clean. Just nice. Like you're going to somebody's home. Just, you know, and yeah, just really blessed by their faithfulness to continue. You know, and just, yeah, blessed by the whole thing. So that was on a Sunday. But before then, days were there. Now, Danville is the size of like York. Like, within an hour, you pretty much have seen everything, if you do it right, okay? So I drove around, went across the bridges, two of them. The Dan River is there. It's most famous for its, like, sheets. You might have seen Dan River sheets, whatever. And then the factory died. So the town is small. And just all the places that I grew up, and I went to the Christian school. Now, there's a couple of things that were amazing. The Christian school... I was only, I went to a lot of schools. So it was in one to Seventh Day Adventist school. My mom moved around a lot, you know, just trying to find work, trying to figure out what she's going to do with her life with three little kids. And, but at one Christian school, Danville Christian School, was quite remarkable. I didn't realize how remarkable it was because while I was sick, at certain points you get bored. And, so I was really bored. And, I began trying to hunt down everything. And it became this hunt with my mom, trying to remember how a 7-year-old woman recalled certain things. But over time, I jogged her memory and mine. And anyway, I found the Christian school, and there's this yearbook site. And for some reason, somebody sent our yearbooks there. So, and it happened to be the only years that they have, one of them, or no, two of the, they had 3 years there. Two of them happened to be when I was there, the only 2 years we were there. So I look online, I'm like, this is my birthday gift to myself. It's like $100. And I'm like, that's my birth. So I sent for it, came in, and yep, it was proven true. We were the only black family in the entire school. And I mean, not a small school, I mean the size of like CSY, a normal Christian large school. So, shocking, in the South. I mean, so it's not the North, in the South. And it's very interesting, a Baptist one at that too. So that was, you know, interesting, you know, because your thoughts and different things. And my mom was a bold woman, you know, here's a single woman working like anything to make sure that, to try her best to make sure that, you know, we would get a Christian school education. But it's really interesting to me because I only spent 2 years in that school, yet I'd have to say they were my most formative years, sixth grade and seventh grade. And it was there that one teacher, Miss Gross, and I have pictures of her that we just, I've been trying to locate her. But, you know, it's like I first heard the words, I love you. And I was just thinking about the impact that we make on each other's lives, whether it's in the Christian school, limited time, but that you can affect a life forever, because I'm forever indebted to her. She's the reason I began teaching. She knows nothing. It wasn't like there, like I said, I'm going to one day. She doesn't know anything, but my mom said she was the one when we left the most concerned. And imagine, like I said, we're like in this predominantly white environment. And I just discovered a truth when I drove there. That school is no more, but the church is there. I didn't know that it's not like CSY. It's like our school and church. The church had a school. I didn't know that. And it blew my mind so much. I called my mom. She's working. And I just said, I don't understand. We went to Calvary Baptist. Why didn't we go to this church? This is the school that we went to. And my mom was, she was at work. She works at this nursing home on the weekends. And she's like, I can't really speak. And so I had to say questions to her. She could say yes or no. And I'm like, I know where I'm at. We were 45 minutes from KKK capital of the area. So I'm like asking her basic questions. Like, I'm like, it's a huge church. I'm like, so we never went there? No. You didn't even want to ever go there? No. Is it because we were black? Yes. So here we are, like this big church, and every day, Monday through Friday, my mom would drop us off and go around the side and we'd go to school. She knew enough that it was important to get that type of education because Christian schools were hard to come by. But the church was never very welcoming to her. And it was this really big church. And yet, but I have never known that. Because even the last school I taught at, Christian school, was connected to a church, and it was very normal. In fact, we ministered to the parents. We always tried to. That's what I'm used to. But the miracle is just that, first, that blew my mind, and the important, and not to take that for granted. And then also blew my mind just the courage of my mom. Because my mom, when she got married, then we moved to South Boston, like an hour away, and still she would drive to this little church, and we would go there. And I was a little in your youth group, and I remember that. And I just, young, I was there from the age of, like, I'm going to say 9 to 13. So, at that church. And very, you know, formative years or what have you. But incredible that this one teacher, I was only in that school for 2 years. But this one teacher had that much of an impact despite what was going on in the school, you know, and, not to blame them, whatever, I don't even remember a whole lot. I just remember enough that you don't have to know everything. And sometimes you can just know things like that. And then, my freshman year, actually, and this was interesting. So I pulled in down to the Danville, from up here. So it's like a 6-7 hour ride from here. And I decided we're going past Chatham, Virginia. So I said, I'm going to take a detour. Now, Chatham, Virginia was where I went to my ninth grade year. It's an all-girls boarding school. The elite of the elite from the South go there. My mom had known of the school because she had had some like J.C.'s or charity meetings there. and that had heard about the school and that asked, do you think my daughter could go here? So, you know, they said they, and it's funny, I was pulling in, my mom's mentioning this, and I saw testing. So I came there, I tested. I guess I tested well enough that they skipped me a grade, and then they, you know, at that time it was $7,000 to go to that school. Now it's about $30,000. So, you know, but I went there, and again, one of the only black people there. But it's funny, when I pulled into the park, I mean, pulled into the, you know, it's a boarding school, Southern style. So it's like a colonial mansion you pull up to, and then there are all of these other buildings. But, like, terror gripped me. I mean, I'm not even kidding. It was like I was freaked. And I'm driving around hoping that they don't come and ask me to leave, even though I attended the school. And, you know, it's so funny. You don't know what you remember, but you know, how your body responds to different things. And so I probably stayed there 20 minutes driving around carefully. Then I would wait, see, I thought somebody, act normal. Now, there's probably no thing, but, you know, that would have been a problem, but it's in me. And it's, you know, I mean, I did hear some words that I had not been so accustomed to before at that school by other classmates, all different words for the color of my skin. But, you know, but that stuff can stay in your soul. And it's interesting how that was. But I drove him over this field because I remember really looking up in the sky. There were different places as a young kid that I would look up and I would think about a big God. And it was on one of their open fields where that happened as well. So, you know, just all of these places that I drove to, spent time and walked around, just like got the feel for, like, and remembered, sat there remembering my, you know, my mom married, so I had a new grandmother where and where she lived in the Baptist church right next to them, which I never knew that they only met like once a month or every other week, you know. But little things that I guess there are a lot, you know, your mind can go to a lot of places. I found myself just grateful, really grateful. And God kept ministering to me just being grateful, because any of this could have gone, I mean, I went down one street, Grove Street, and all eyes were on me. And like, you know, it's like, and I went down the other neighborhood I used to live in, you know, and we were poor, so my mom got this, like, I don't know, good deal. Maybe they do that nowadays. You pay a little bit of money and you buy this house, but the house is destroyed, and my mom had hoped that, but it never happened. The place was creepy and cold, and then we moved from there eventually. But even now, the neighborhood, you know, we were in the center of town, to give you an idea, in the center of town, and the land right next to us, we were growing cucumbers, tomatoes, and whatnot. So it was, and when I came out of church on Sunday, as I was getting into my car, I had to be careful because a deer was crossing the road. And that's the center of town. Main Street's right there. So that gives you an idea of small town. But I wanted to say this, that I'm so grateful to God. There were a lot of missteps that could have happened. And I've got a picture now from this viewpoint of my mom as this young woman who had three kids and had to make big decisions for her life. And also, I had to try to get them right, you know, and ages 10 to 14, 15, and then I had to get them right, you know, because you only get one shot at it type thing. And I remember just being so grateful driving to these places, each one of them stopping there, thinking about them, thinking about my life and how it went. And then I think the final part was as I was beginning, the last day I was there, I was heading out. Because I went and then spent some time at a retreat, just to have a little retreat with God. But the last day I was there, I talked to my mom, and then she told me a story that I didn't know. That she was struggling to find, like, she didn't think, what am I going to do? As a black woman, single woman, she really, you know, she's like, I don't want to be like a nurse's aide the rest of my life. I need to do more, and I want to be able to put these kids back in Christian school. So so then she married, and same problem. They couldn't make enough money. So she decided to come back to Baltimore, because that was where I had been born. Because my father had, you know, when in their young age, they had bought a small hot row home in the center of Baltimore, where so the mortgage there was like $100 a month. So she's like, well, why don't I just come back, bring the kids there, and I can try to put them in school, Christian school in that area. But so before she goes, but I'll give it one more shot. So she took the civil service exam. And that's this exam basically to let you see if you can work for the government and be like a, what do you call it, work in a post office. But they didn't get back to her in time, so she left. And I remember a couple Mormons helped move us, missionary Mormons, and we moved here to Baltimore. So then she told me this part I never knew. 3 weeks later, she received a letter saying that had a perfect score in the civil service exam, will give you a great high-paying job in what have you, and it's going to be in Roanoke, Virginia, which is maybe about a half an hour away. And she and my stepfather were talking and just said, I can't uproot them again. So she didn't. And that was a huge decision for us because, you know, I would have changed everything. I wouldn't be sitting here. Because most of the people in Danville don't leave Danville. You know what I mean? The faces you see there, they're there. They don't leave. And I don't know where I would be and what I would have done. And I do know this, though. I would not have been going back to that church to say, look what you began. Mm-hmm. And it just made me think about all the near misses and our lives and some things. And this is not a perfect, whatever. I had regrets. I absolutely had regrets, or things could have been better or different. You know what I mean? But I have to be honest and say there's one song that just kept playing over and over. Like I had like my Spotify up, and but it would just come on, and it was Count Your Blessings, and God's hand was absolutely on me. And regardless of even my mom, regardless of what have you, but, and also on her, but regardless of that, and I guess I wanted to say this, that, we live in a day and age that really spends most of its time not rehearsing these things and not being thankful, but rather being ungrateful. Rather being accusatory, rather finding fault, or because things weren't so great as we think about them. We live in an age where people are not so appreciative. And our living was hard. Our living was very hard. And even when I was in private school, the boarding school, my mom couldn't afford both, so they were in public school. So my mom actually had to choose, which kid was where. That's really tough for a mom, And I was the youngest, and I was a girl, so she had to really, protect the girls. And I just come around something like that once or twice, but just to say to you that a lot of things. One is... thankfulness is an important part of our life, and it doesn't matter what age you are. It doesn't matter what it is that we perceive that we've gone through. Otherwise, our life will pass us very quickly. Like turning 50 was like, wow, I didn't think I'd hit that number. But to hit it, and to hit it in such a way, not because I have money, because I don't, not because I have a whole lot to show for it, because I don't, except for this. There is something, and this is really the verse I want to think about tonight. It's really... one verse and just a piece of it. We need to 1 Peter. Mm-hmm.
you snitching already?
I'm sorry. It's 2 Peter. And it's actually, we'll read a couple of the verses. And 2 Peter 1:3, according as his divine power has given us into us all things that pertain unto life and godliness through the knowledge of him that has called us to glory and virtue, whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these you might be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust, and besides this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge. And I want to stop right there. And to not, well, let's keep going. To knowledge, temperance, and to temperance, patience, and to patience, godliness, and godliness, brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness, charity. For if these things be in you and abound, they make you that you shall neither be barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. But he that lacketh these things is blind and cannot see afar off, and has forgotten that he was purged from his old sins. Wherefore, the rather, brother, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. For if you do these things, you shall never fall. It's interesting. Everything has been provided to each one of us, no matter what age that you're at. He has given us everything that pertains. God has given. This is not, I can make my life very small, and I can make it about the guy next to me, the girl next to me, my parents, my whatever. But really, this life is about one thing. I was given a gift. Everything that has been given to me that pertains to life and godliness. And these promises. And I love that, you know, when we were kids, promises were a big thing. You know, somebody made a promise, that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. Then you lived on it. But I'm saying like this, and, you know, just in the last few minutes here to say this, I love that these promises are not just for children. There's a promise for today. There's a promise for the age I'm in. There's a promise, but I can look back and say, God, you took care of me. And I escaped the corruption that is in the world. I escaped it. You know, there are two ways to escape something. One is I escape it. I have a plan. I'm part of a plan. We can talk about it. And I escape. I get out of it, all right? That's interesting. And then there's another way where I escaped, but I have nothing to do with it. And in a lot of ways, I escaped hell, and I had nothing to do with it. And he even says this, you know what, that listen, to not remember these things in verse 9 is to be blind, because I was purged from my own sin, and I had nothing to do with the purging from my own sin. That was done, Christ did that. I didn't get to participate in that. And I escaped Virginia, and guess what? I had zero to do with that. Zero. That was all on the shoulders of my mom, who carried the weight of this. I had zero to do with it. But these seeds were put inside of me, and so that I could be barren, neither barren nor unfruitful. And like, you know, there was power and strength given to me. And this is what the thought I was thinking, that giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue. You know, this idea of virtue, and we'll just basically call it this character, this godly character. And I was thinking, because I knew I was going to come back, and I know we're still in this book, and we will hit it, we'll begin, but I didn't want to just jump into it, because a lot has happened. God had to start the book, and then he had a lot of things happen to me. And hopefully you've by this point read the book, or read most of it, to be able to talk about these things, and I'm sure you've talked about them. But I want to say that really, it was, well, I drove up and down this one street because I remember, like, my mom got this magazine called Guidepost, and I read it, and it said that God speaks to me. And it blew my mind. And I was at Chatham Hall, this boarding school, and all the girls, because high pressure to go to good schools, they would take drugs at the, back then it's like these, they were precursors to real hard stuff. And exam times, because they had to get good grades. And I had the opportunity to do it, and I said no. Adding to your faith virtue. So when I drove there and I think about that these girls and where they are now, but honestly, I'm so grateful to the near misses. And honestly, whatever anybody would be here tonight, and you could be upset or you could be unhappy with where your life is, but I will say this, where my life is now is still better than what it would have been. We don't know the location of where we would have been. Maybe this would have been a dream. You know, there's some situations that, you know, I'm privy to what I'm thinking about. Like, these people, like, you make these decisions, and the simple things become a dream. Do you understand what I mean by that? Like, it's simple. Like, walking, okay, for instance, I'll give you an example. I'm in a bedroom, which I couldn't wait to get out of. I don't even want to go back there for now. Because of, it's my mom's house, because I just, that becomes a dark place after a while. But something as simple as being able to, when I came back here and went upstairs and went to my bedroom, I just was like, I was just overwhelmed, actually. You know, because that's simple thing, simple. But that was, but better than, someone else would say, what's the big deal? And I'm saying, my life is not, it's not like you're going to write a book about my life. You know, I mean, the sense of like all those growing up adventures. It would be maybe, you know, not so exciting because that people have had a lot of things happen to them. But it isn't that. It's about the character. It's about the virtue. It's about the things that God brings us through. Not, you know, that make us something. And but it's internal things. We are made these things. If these be in you and abound, they make you both to be not barren nor unfruitful. Like I have something that the, you know, that's very tangible, rock hard. You know, the ability to get up in front of this former church, and I'm like, how am I going to tell them what they've done? But when I was done, and you know, actually, obviously, after church. They would come up to me, and one of the ladies, you know, said, and I said, you know, I don't know how to say it. I wanted to convey it. And she goes, your heart came out. You know, I haven't seen these people in a long time. But the real thing, because the real is real. Add to your faith virtue. Virtue, that book, Disciplines of a Beautiful Woman, is the only, it only allows us to get to know, to, it is, it is about virtue. Can I add, can that be added to me? Because if that is added, then really, I don't lose it much. Mm-hmm. Adding that, and then from then, other things are added to me, but I don't lose. Does that make sense? Like, to add these things. And I just want to say one more thing, and then I'll close this, but you know, there was something, and I shared this with a couple people because it really triggered something. But at one point I had a realization that I could have been a better person in a certain situation growing up. And I don't want to go into detail, but, you know, it bothered me because I thought, you know, we're all, you know, in hindsight is 2020, but whatever, it doesn't really matter. The bottom line, it was sin. And I know and I know it was hurtful. Okay, so this bothered me for like a day. And then, you know, like I said, I'm listening to Spotify because I'm driving these distances, and I'm remembering my mom had driven. I realized, my gosh, to get me to Christian school when we moved, they had to drive an hour each way. It blew my mind when I drove it. But this bothered me, but it wasn't a big deal. But it was just in my head. It bothered me. And then the song comes on, and in the middle of the song, it talks about, it's called "Dear Younger Me," and it says in the middle, toward the end of the song, "But don't worry about it, the cross." And it really spoke to me, because I have listened to a lot of people talk about all the things that have happened to them when they were younger. And I am not negating that some bad things have happened, but there are martyrs or people who have gone through a lot of things. But very few, except the ones who have gone to jail for it or something, very few of those particular people have ever talked about their sins, about what the harm they caused. They have been victimized, but really, you cause sin too. And I say that anybody, because I can say that to each one in this room, because we're sinners. There are two sides to the cross. Forgiveness is double-sided. It's the side of what people did to me, and then it's the side of what I did to people. And I can't say, you don't know what you did. There could be just as much as there's a teacher that I'd like to thank when I get to heaven. There could be someone else who caused major damage. Major damage. Like I could tell you, I do vividly remember certain things that were said to me when I was at that boarding school. But there are two sides. Forgiveness is too double-sided. And to the degree that I give all of my attention to what was done to me, I will never be the person that God made me to be, because I will not acknowledge all the things that I did to other people. And the cross is forgiveness is for both. And it's so very easy to concentrate on the one. And I understand being hurt, being abused emotionally, sexually, physically, any of those things. But part of a release, it made me think of a couple situations. Maybe part of the release will come in you being forgiven. Because honestly, for the things, and maybe if you didn't, like I had a cathartic opportunity. I had to literally drive 7 hours, be there a few days, sit there, and then for that to hit me like a wave. So it's not something that's going to come to you. We're very good at burying things. So to sit, to really wow, but what about people I made? That's the disciplines of the beautiful woman. That's in your quiet time. That's in these moments of like being open to those things and then letting that hit you like a ton of bricks and then letting that forgiveness cleanse me too. I must be cleansed. You must be cleansed. But it's a double-sided sword of forgiveness. So I just wanted to give, these are just some of the thoughts, and I'm sure more will come out. But there are things, Peter says this, and he says, listen, he says in the same chapter, I'm going to die, but I want to make sure that you know these things. Because it's important that I put you in remembrance if you read the rest of this chapter of these things. And I'm going to say this, it's important to have these type of things in our lives, because I don't want to get to the end not having been forgiven of something that I didn't even think about. We do it with kids in a school or in a church or whatever. You bring it, hey, you have a little family meeting or you have a little time meeting. You hurt me. I've heard about this. There was they wrote an article, this guy really was hurt by this guy. And come to find out one day he's a reporter and he's got to go interview this guy. And he's with them and the guy remembers him. But doesn't remember. But it was his bully. And they're together for like a week. And he realizes, when is this bully going to say something like, I'm sorry or whatever? But it never happened. And finally at the end of the week, he couldn't help himself. He said, do you remember me? He goes, yeah, we're buddies, right? Yeah, this is great. And they're hanging out because they hung out for the week. He goes, do you remember what you did to me? And he didn't. The abuses, the pushing around, the shoving, the treating, mistreating me, he didn't remember any of it. But he said, I'm really sorry. it's easy, just as easy to suppress, like, what has been done to me, is it easy to suppress what I have done to others. And it was like this moment, like, okay, here he is carrying that burden. And so it takes time. I am both those people. I am the person who's been so, if you will, been offended, and I am the offender. And Christ came to die for the offended one and the offender. And I must partake of drink of Calvary to that level. So these things, to drink in these things and to add to my life and to realize, okay, God, I don't want my life to be barren and unfruitful. I'm grateful for the things. I'm grateful that your hand, that you are watching me, that you are keeping me. And yes, things could be 10 times worse than they are now. They can be, but they're not. And I, you know what? I could have gone, I'm grateful for that opportunity to have sensed God's forgiveness and to know my offense. I really am, actually. Because it's a gift. Because, like I said, people walk through life blinded and very, like, it's okay for them to cause offense all day long. It's a gift to know that I don't have to offend when God reveals that to me. And it's also a gift when God cleanses me and also he gives me forgiveness for other people for what they've done to me. And I would have driven that, I mean, by the time it was done, I was 11 hours away from here. I would have driven that twice over for just that at this, you know, at this point. So as we're thinking about this book and relating it to different to the Bible and different things, what we would want out of it is to be in touch with ourselves and with God so that he can whisper to us in quietness, hey, let me talk to you about something, just like he did when I was away. And I can hear his voice, and it can be sweet to be corrected. And it can be sweet to be forgiven. It's because it's so sweet to be loved. Because he says, those whom I love, I chasten. And those whom I rebuke, I love. Amen?
Amen.
Okay, Father, just thank you. Thank you for bringing me back here.
That's not a small thing. And I was very much aware of how quickly life can go. Thank you for each lady here, and God bless them. And God, I know you just want to talk to us, and we're poor listeners. And we like to talk to you, but basically we're the kind of people like who like to talk, to like to listen, thinking about the next thing that we're going to say, rather than what you have to say. Speak to us, God. Get us quiet. Change us. We need to be changed. We just love you, God. We thank you. And we are grateful for both sides of the cross. In your son's name, amen.